The name Krishna means the all-attractive. The name Hare is the name of the pleasure potency of the Lord, which comes from devotional service. And the happiness that is attained by devotional service is known as Rama. Ramanti Yogina Te Satchanana Chidatmani Iti Rama Padeya Surparam Rama Vidiyate. And in this way, we find that in the Maha Mantra, the perfect meaning of all spiritual life is included. The all-attractive Supreme Lord, devotional service to Him, bringing back the greatest happiness. Some are saying that name Ram is referring to Lord Ramachandra. Others are saying, no. It is Ramakrishna. It is Krishna Balaram. Srila Prabhupada, in his presence, saw that two sannyasis amongst his disciples were arguing on this point. Ram means Ramachandra, Ram means Balaram. Prabhupada said, no. He said, Ram, his name is Lord Ramachandra. It means Balaram, both. It means, because all are included. In the Brahma Samhita, Lord Brahma has given us some more understanding. He says, Ramadi Murtisu Niyame, Ramadi Murtisu Kala Niyame, Tisthan, Nanavatara Makarat Bhumani, Sikhita, Krishna Swayam Samavat Paramat Bhumanyo, Govinda Mahi Purusham Tamam Vajami. And he is saying that there are many incarnations, such as Ram, Ramadi, Rama Adi. Adi means accept, etc. So many incarnations are there in various forms. And all these incarnations are Anavatara Kurupulanesi. But Krishna is Swayam Samabhavat Paraman Bhuvan Yoga. He is the Supreme Personality of God, the original Supreme Lord. So in the Padma Purana, it is described that Lord Ramachandra is none other than Narayan, and that his brothers, Lakshman, Bharat, and Saturna, that these brothers are the Shesha, or no, I'm sorry, that was... Yes, Sesha, Shankar, and Balaram. So, whereas elsewhere in the Vishnu Dharmakara, it is stated that the Chaturvyuha, or Vasudev, Sankarshan, Padjuna, Anirudha, these four personalities, which are extensions of Krishna, they become Ram, Lakshman, Bharat, and Satrughna. Well, what to say? Srila Bhaktivedanta Jibusan, one of our Tattva Acharyas, has explained that actually both is true, but just it happens in different yugas. So in some yugas, and maybe the Chaturvyuha, in other yugas, extensions of Narayan and his various weapons. Whatever it may be, it gives us an idea who Lord Ramachandra is. That Lord Ramachandra is indeed an extension of Krishna. And that, as Srila Prabhupada said, he is almost Krishna, practically no different from Krishna. But Lord Ramachandra, he is different from Krishna in the sense that when Lord Ramachandra comes to this planet, he reveals to us the Dharma for all human beings. He reveals at all times how human beings should conduct themselves. When it's Krishna, he comes to reveal the transcendental activities of the spiritual world. His own eternal activities in the spiritual world. So in this way, we see that Lord Ramachandra is coming particularly for that mission of Paitranaya Sadhanam Vinasya Sudushkritam Dharma Samstarpanatiya Sambhavami Yuge Yuge, which is described in the Bhagavad Gita. That the Lord is coming to establish the principles of religion and to annihilate the demons. Well, certainly, Lord Ramachandra, like no other, killed so many demons. Like no other, endless rakshasas were being killed by Lord Ramachandra. Therefore, Lord Ramachandra is described to be the wielder of weapons. He who fought in such a way like no one else. We see how when Ram is still very young, that one day the sage Vishwamitra is coming to Dasarath. And that sage, Vishwamitra, is coming to beg in charity from the king. So the king is very happy that a great sage has come and he is prepared to give him whatever he desires. Then the king is shocked when Vishwamitra says, I want your son to come with me. I want your son to come with me to kill various rakshasas. Dasarath is shocked. He said, but he's only a child. When we're actually studying the Ramayana, we see that at that time Lord Ramachandra was only 12 years old. It is said that he did not have any beard yet. And his face was still like at that freshness of youth, still a boy. So Dasarath said, no, how can he go? I will go. How can he go? He's just a boy. But Vishwamitra was very determined. And Vishwamitra, he was very certain. He said, no, he knows what to do. But we see that in that first fight with the rakshasas, where various demons were being fought with, one of them was Maricha. And at that time, Maricha was causing great disturbance by defiling sacrifices that were being performed. And Ram took an arrow. And he took this arrow, and upon that arrow, he spoke a divine astra, a divine celestial mantra, by which he invoked a weapon of the demigods. And this weapon, it threw Marichi at a great distance of 800 yojanas into the ocean. And Ram, at that time, was saying to Lakshman, look at the amazing power of this weapon. Just like a boy, still playing, but already unlimitedly powerful. But yet, sort of discovering his own power in his youth. But even then, having great power, and that power being unleashed and further polished by Vishwamitra, who gave them various astras. And in this way, the Ram and Lakshman showed their prowess. Of course, the Ramayana is a very long story with so much detail, and I will only highlight a few points, because otherwise we should have started in the morning. We should have started at 8 o'clock this morning, and we should have had Ram Katha the whole day. We could have done. But now, because it's evening, we have to keep it short. Because in the evening, the Rakshasas are becoming more and more powerful. So, it is said that Ravana, in the evening, his strength would double. Therefore, we should not wait too long. We should not wait too long before Ravana is being killed, because we might get in trouble otherwise. Anyhow, but before we begin, I'd just like to remember how Dasara, it is as a younger man, before the appearance of his son, was commissioned for a great fight with a very, very powerful demon that had the ability to fight through the typical techniques that Rakshasas have. He could fight and make himself invisible. Or next moment, it appeared that he was attacking from all the 10 directions. In that fight, Dasarath showed so much prowess. He was so fast in shooting his arrows in all directions that it appeared that he was shooting in 10 directions at the same time. It so happened, though, that his good wife, she was riding a chariot, and she was like really riding it very expertly everywhere. The queen was riding a chariot and maneuvering it in various ways, and somehow or other, without a good chariot driver, how can one win any battle? So Dasarath was very pleased by her dedication. And at one point, he became hit by a weapon of that enemy to a point that he fell unconscious in the chariot. And again, she drove that chariot so quickly into the sky that the demon couldn't reach Dasarath, and it gave Dasarath the time to recover and to then resume the fight. Finally, at the end of the fight, the brake pin of the chariot wheel came out, and the wheel would have come off. At that point, it was Kaikeyi who put her finger right there in the hole, not considering any pain, fearless. She just put that finger in the hole. And this way, Dasarath won that battle. Oh, how indebted was he to her? How much had she shown? How much had she shown her dedication to him to save his life? What trouble did she not take? How deep was her love for him? Oh, there was no doubt how much she was dedicated to him. Dasarath's heart melted, and he offered her boons, 2 boons. She said, "I'll take them later." Yes. And in this way, Dasarath returned with his most dedicated wife. Of course, there's otherwise. Kusalya, Sumitra, they were also wonderful, undoubtedly. But still, how could he say no to Kaikeyi after everything she had done? The curtain drops. This first act is over. We'll just start somewhere else. But anyway, I guess, I guess you know what's going to happen. I guess you know how Ram is going to be banned to the forest. KK, influenced by that hunchbacked mantra, is somehow or other coming to collect her boons. Yes, yes. And for the first boon, I want Ram to go for the forest. And for the second boon, I want my son Bharat on the throne. Bharat, yes. Throne, yes. My son. On there. Now. Good. Yes, what to say. These things were all transpiring. And then we remember the reactions. We remember how Dasarath was totally, totally overwhelmed by grief, how he could not speak. And we remember that everyone was shocked that this thing was happening. And that, yes, Dasarath, a man of Dharma, was following Dharma for only one reason. He thought to himself, I will not grant her those boons. I will not. I will break my word. I will break it. Oh yes, I will break it. Why would I keep my word if it will break my heart? If it will break my heart and if I will have to send my son Ramachandra into the forest, why? Why? Why would I not? Why would I oblige? No, I will break my word. Then he said, but if I break my word, then I give the wrong example to my son Ramachandra. How could I do that? No, that I could never do. Therefore, how can I break my word? And thus my heart breaks, shatters into millions of pieces, and thus, how can I live? He couldn't even speak. Oh, it was like, you know, Ram was summoned and Kakei basically had to sort of say, you know, like, your father wants to tell you something, but he couldn't. She had to tell him in the end. Right? And Ram was simply saying, but mother, why did you use those boons for that? Just upon your word, I would have gone. And everyone was upset, but Ram was calm. I kind of like that point, that Lord Ramachandra was by no means upset about the whole thing. He was just about to be crowned as king, and now it wasn't happening. The arrangements were already being made for the coronation. And now, it was no problem. No problem. He was ready to go to the forest. All right, we'll leave it at that. Ram, followed by Sita, followed by Lakshman, is going to the forest, and they are brought by Sumantra. In his chariot, and they're bringing these three personalities to the edge of the forest. There, the king of the Nishadas is ready to carry them across the river by boats. He is close. Bhuma, the king of the Nishadas, was a close friend of Dasarath. It is said that Sumantra, he just stood there and couldn't believe it, that they were really going into the forest. But they were really going now. The chariot was empty. And as they were going across that river and gradually going out of the sight of Sumantra and entering into the forest, he had no other possibility than to return. But he just stood there and cried. But finally, he thought to himself, no, I must go back, because they're eager to hear in Ayodhya what happened. But it wasn't possible to go back, because it is mentioned in Ramayana that the horses were also crying. So the horses stood there and they were crying and they couldn't walk. They were overwhelmed. Anyway, eventually everyone got over the tears and he did go. He did go back. But when he came back to Ayodhya, the chariot was empty and everyone was looking at that chariot and just saying, where is Ram? Where is Sita? Where is Lakshman? Where are they? Have they really gone to the forest? Did Sumantra bring them? So Sumantra became so embarrassed that he was seen as the one who had taken Sita, Ram and Lakshman out of Ayodhya, that he covered his head with a cloth, so that no one could see who was riding the chariot there. Meanwhile, Guha had taken Lord Ramachandra into the forest and suggested that he would stay in a place nearby. Lord Ramachandra stayed there for the night, but then told Guha that he could not stay there much longer because he felt that if he stayed so close, people would all the time come and beg him to return to Ayodhya. That would be very difficult then to say no. But upon the order of his father, he had to stay 14 years in the forest. So he wanted to go deeper into the forest. It is said that first night they spent in the forest, Lakshman makes a nice bed of leaves and other forest materials, and Sita Ram rested, and Lakshman was nearby guarding the entire night, and so was Guha and his men. They were all guarding. It's said that as the next day they were about to go into the forest, at that point Sita, she saw how there were these bees, and the bees, they were drinking the honey from the flowers, and there was so much honey that the bees became intoxicated from drinking that honey. And Ram said, look, they're totally drunk from drinking that honey. But then you see there are other bees that are not intoxicated, and they show them the way home. And Sita heard that. She thought that was the biggest joke. And all the stress and everything she felt was sort of being relieved. She just laughed and laughed and laughed. So they went deep into the forest, and eventually they were directed to the ashram of Bharadwaj, and they came there, and he directed them eventually to Chitrakoot, and there they made their ashram. Well, again, I just take a few stories. And in each of these stories, we're seeing that there are very deep relationships. Deep relationships amongst the Lord and his devotees. These relationships are not of an ordinary nature. And therefore the attachment everyone felt for Lord Ramachandra was the attachment of pure devotional service. It was not the ordinary family attachment of this world, or the ordinary attachment that citizens might feel for their king. The residents of Ayodhya had so much attachment for Krishna that for Lord Ramachandra, their separation was just overwhelming. At the very end of the Ramayana, that's after the whole battle is over and so on, and when in due course of time, it becomes time for Lord Ramachandra to wind up his pastimes. It is said when the Lord is leaving the planets, then the residents of Ayodhya are also leaving. And thus, it is said not only did Lord Ramachandra return to his original abode in the spiritual sky, but he took with him all the residents of Ayodhya, all of them. They also all gave up their lives, and they all went with Lord Ramachandra, except for Hanuman. Hanuman stayed. Hanuman is known as one of the Chiranjeevas, one of those who just live till the very end, till the very end of this day of Brahma. Right? Hanuman is staying. But why? Why is Hanuman staying in Kimpurusa Varsa? In separation of Lord Ramachandra? How is it possible that he would stay for so many years in separation of his Lord? Why did he not return? Isn't he the greatest devotee amongst all those devotees? He said that Hanuman is undoubtedly the greatest devotee of the Lord. But the reason why Hanuman is not returning back to the spiritual world is not that he felt no separation. It's not that he was not experiencing unbearable pain in absence of the Lord. He was. But it is because he is the greatest servant of the Lord. And after all, Lord Ramachandra is Patitabhava, is the deliverer of the most fallen, is most merciful, is reaching out to those who have really no qualification. It is described that when Lord Ramachandra appeared in this world, that Lord Vishnu ordered the demigods to appear in the as powerful monkeys in this world, because of the various curses that Ravana had on his head. Because Ravana had various benedictions and various curses. And these benedictions were benedictions given by Lord Brahma. And the benedictions were that he could not be killed by any god or any demon. It was, he never asked not to be killed by human beings or by animals. Because, those puny little creatures, what could they do anyway? So that, he didn't bother with that, really. And therefore, the Lord appeared in a human form. And the demigods appeared in the form of animals, of powerful monkeys. Hanuman. Of course, being the foremost, the son of Ayu, Maruti, he is known as Maruti. And then we have Sugriva, the son of Indra. Sugriva is the son of Surya, and Ali is the son of Indra. So like this, powerful monkeys appeared. They were enormous. They were extremely, extremely powerful. And they could also change forms at will, as they liked. They could disguise themselves also as human beings and so on. They could do. And Hanuman, of course, was the most powerful. It said that after his birth, his mother, who had been an apsara, who had somehow or other acted inappropriately by developing conjugal attraction for a sage, and who had been cursed and suffered to become a monkey. Ah, she was very shocked and begged for forgiveness. But finally, the sage then told her, "All right, you will be a monkey, but as soon as you give birth to a son, you will be relieved from this curse and can again resume your original form as a person." So Anjaneya, the mother of Hanuman, when she gave birth to a son, she was ready to go. But Hanuman, he grabbed her cloth and said, "Oh, where are you going?" She said, "Sorry, I have to go now." He said, "No, you can't go. You are my mother." She said, "No, I have to go." He said, "But I'm hungry." She said, "No problem. You just eat whatever is round and red." Thinking about berries and all these things. And it was night when she left. So early in the morning, the first round and red thing that Hanuman saw was the sun. So he jumped up in the air and just flying, like ready to swallow that sun. Oh, yes. And of course, they thought that it was maybe Rahu that was attacking or whatever it was. The sun was worried, saw this creature coming at great speed with its mouth open, and Indra interfered, as we know. And Indra, with a thunderbolt, hit Lakshman. Of course, when Vayu actually saw that his son was being attacked in this way, he became so upset that he withdrew all the air from the universe, which was a complication because all created beings were suffocating. So yeah, what to do? Since everyone was choking, something had to be done. So everyone made peace, and then Vayu supplied a bit of air again. Not at full force yet. So then all the various demigods began to offer different benedictions and the powers to Hanuman, and he became even more powerful. And finally, Brihaspati, who is the spiritual master of the demigods and very wise, he gave Hanuman the knowledge of like different berries and fruits that monkeys can eat, So in that way, he actually solved the problem. But Hanuman, as a child, was very wild and so powerful that he upset many sacrifices and all these things, not on purpose, but just by bouncing around and checking out his powers. So finally the sages cursed him that he would forget his own strengths, and that he would only remember his strengths the day that someone would remind him of it. So like in this way, Hanuman was somewhat reduced in strength, still very powerful, but somewhat reduced in strength. So the sages had some peace, and this is how it is. All went on. We remember though that later, when it was time to, when Sampati had seen that Sita was in Lanka, that they were wondering, how are we going to get there? How are we going to go to Lanka? And they were discussing, and Jambavan was saying, if I would be still young, I could surely jump across that ocean to Lanka, but now in my old age, I can no longer do such a feat, but I know one who can do. And that is Hanuman. And he was reminding Hanuman of his strength and his power, and Hanuman then, fully aware of his power, took an enormous form, climbed on the mountain, and jumped off that mountain, and flew to Lanka. Yeah, what else? else to say. Some say that Hanuman is more popular than Lord Ramachandra. That is, well, whether that's true or not, it's hard to say. Because in India, when the Ramayana was being shown on TV, right, everyone was just glued in front of the television. I was also in India at the time, and I was also watching it. Everyone was watching it. Right? Whenever Parliament would be in session, they would just cancel the government sessions to watch the Ramayana. When people were traveling on a train, they would pull the emergency brake, get down, walk into a village, find a television, sit down, and watch the Ramayana. When in some villages, during the Ramayana, the electricity went off, you know, people got so angry they burned the power out. What can you say? The Ramayana. It is after that, on the strength of Ram, a political party became very powerful in India and eventually grabbed the government. Right? All on the strength of this Ramayana. So who is the most popular? One who thinks that Hanuman is more popular than Lord Ramachandra doesn't understand that you can't separate the two. Not only in the sense of that they are so attached to each other, but in the mind of everyone, because what is Hanuman without his devotion to Ram? Then he would just be another like brainless personality like Superman or like Spider-Man or like Batman, you know, all muscle and no brain kind of guys. And say, that would be like totally boring, right? It is his noble character. It is extraordinary noble character that makes Hanuman the most amazing personality. It begins already when he meets them for the first time. Hanuman appears in a human disguise, and Hanuman is speaking very eloquently. When Hanuman meets Ram and Lakshman for the first time, Hanuman is speaking so nicely, and he is speaking very, very expertly, exactly choosing the right words and even choosing the right note. Yeah? Because according to the Vedic literature, there's a certain note where you address someone, not too low, not too high, but the proper note, right? On a proper note, you know, like, very difficult for us. We are not that culture that we know what is the proper note to address someone. But Hanuman showed that he was very cultured. So then Hanuman inquired. He saw these princes dressed as ascetics coming into the forest. They were carrying weapons. And who were they? They were surely not sages from the forest. They looked extremely powerful. And therefore, Hanuman came as a spy to check it out. And then he inquired from them. He introduced himself. I'm the minister of Sugriva, the king in this area. And who are you? So Lakshman spoke. And Lakshman said, this is Ramachandra. He is the crown prince in the Ram dynasty, the son of Dasarath and like that. You know, he glorified Lord Ramachandra. And then he said, instead of saying, I am his younger brother, he said, and I am his servant. Therefore we're seeing the entire Ramayana is a narrative of devotees, right? And of course demons. But
of devotees when we are speaking about Laxman and in his dealings with the Lord. He's acting completely like a devotee. We see the same in the other brothers. We see the same in Bharat. And of course Bharat, the whole Bharat story, how Bharat was supposed to take the throne and KK had arranged the whole thing while Bharat wasn't there, was visiting his grandfather, and then when he came, he was called back after his father had died of separation from Ram, and KK was so happy to tell the news to her son that she had reserved the throne for him. And he said, "What? You sinful wretch," he almost killed her. And he was on the edge of killing his mother. Right? It's like disowned her, didn't want to know her. And anyway, in the end, you know, didn't want to have anything to do with her. You know, just rejected her. But then you see how that whole scene is there. How Bharat follows. He follows Lord Ramachandra to the forest. And it is an interesting situation because he doesn't come alone. He brings with him a huge army. And why is he bringing a huge army? If he would have come alone just to ask Ram to come back, that would have been one thing. But the fact that he brought an army was very strange. You see? That was a cause for concern. Why did he bring an army? But why did he bring an army? He brought an army, not just an army. He brought everybody from Ayodhya. He brought everybody, even the queens had come, Kausalya had come, Sumitra had come. Why? Because Bharat knew very well that otherwise, no matter what I say, I will never be able to convince him. Never. But if everybody asks him, if his mother asks him, then maybe he will do it. Maybe. That's why he brought the whole army. Anyways, it's a whole discussion, but of course, didn't work. And then we see Bharat taking the shoes of Lord Ramachandra and replacing them on the throne. So anyway, again, I'll jump to the end. At the end, after the battle of Lanka is over, then when Ram is flying back to Ayodhya, he sends Hanuman as a messenger ahead. And Hanuman is supposed to go and bring the message that Lord Ram is coming back. And at the same time, he should look at how Bharat is responding. And if Bharat shows any attachment to the throne and any signs of unhappiness about the return of Ramachandra, then Lord Ram will not accept the throne. But when Bharat hears the news, Bharat is just so overwhelmed. Bharat has all the time performed great austerity, dressed in tree bark and fasting, and he looks emaciated from all the austerities he had performed, and effulgent at the same time. And Bharat is just so genuinely ecstatic and happy that Hanuman can understand that actually Bharat has the same love for the Lord as I have. And therefore, he is equally devoted, and there is no doubt. And he returns to Lord Ramachandra with the message, "Yes, Bharat is very eager for your return." So all these relationships exist of great devotion and dedication to the Supreme Lord. So we look at these relationships as transcendental. And therefore, when we read the Ramayana, we see a lot of tears and a lot of separation. It's like very dramatic, actually. Very dramatic. So it's deep attachment. Because spiritual attachment is not the same as the attachment of this world. Spiritual attachment is of a much deeper nature. And therefore, the attachment we are seeing here is of that nature. Well, I think it's been sweet enough, long enough, in this part of the presentation. I think it's time that we are moving on towards some action. Of course, one thing I do like is the Bali, is the Bali pastime, where Bali has this thing with his brother that, a very, very stressed relationship, and we won't get into how it happened, but basically, the Kiskindha Hill is a hill which is a place where Bali cannot go, because if ever he sets foot on that hill, he has a curse upon his head that he will die. So, but he never sets foot on the hill, never. He rather stays away from there, and there is Sugriva, who is his younger brother and weaker. He hides on that hill because Bali is harassing him. But every day, Bali is flying in the air, and he gives one kick on the head of Sugriva, and then flies on and lands beyond the hill. And this is a daily pastime. So, at one point, it gets just too much headache for Sugriva. He can't tolerate it any longer. It's just getting too much. Just too much. So, it is at that point that Ramachandra appears and becomes his ally. And then there is this situation where they make a pact. And then Lord Ramachandra agrees to kill Bali. So it's a whole thing. So Lord Ramachandra hides behind a tree. And as Bali comes flying through the sky to kick Sugriva, Lord Ramachandra shoots him from an ambush. So this is such a thing. And there Bali is lying on the ground flapping and is like near death, and he's been shot in the back. So, and Ramachandra walks up to him. And Bali's lying there and said, How could you act in such a way? I heard that you were a powerful kshatriya. I heard that you were one who always lived by Dharma. Oh, now the truth has come out. You are a bad shooter. Instead of challenging me to fair fight, you were hiding behind a tree, and from an ambush, you cowardly shot me. I would never expect this. And then Lord Ramachandra begins to explain. And says, I hear Bali. Look at yourself. Look at who you are. Look at what you did. Look at how you have treated your brother. How you have tried to take, how you took away his wife. How you have acted in this way. Have you followed rules of Dharma? You have not lived by Dharma. You have not even behaved like a human being. You have behaved like an animal. And therefore, I have treated you like the animal that you are. And when a kshatriya goes into the forest, and he goes to fight with animals, he may hide behind a tree or some ambush and shoot that animal in that way. Therefore, there is no fault in my action, because you are an animal. And finally, just before he dies, Bali realizes that he's an animal. Right? And what that means, that an animal is not following Dharma. And that is why he's an animal. Not because he's a monkey. Because, after all, he's the son of Indra. How is he an animal? In one sense, he's a divine being. But yet he behaved like an animal by deviating from principles of Dharma. And thus, Bali at the end can accept it, that Lord Ramachandra acted in a just way. I always highlight this because it's something extraordinary. We can then also from that appreciate ourselves. Are we human beings or animals? It's not that automatically we are human.
Excuse me.
Maybe from the flowers. Yeah. Yeah, so are we human beings or animals? Dharme nahinu vastavirs samana. Without following the principles of Dharma, one is merely an animal. Then we are not as dvipadipasu, two-legged animals. Oh, this is something. It is a big thing to embrace principles of Dharma. It's very difficult, especially in this age. I like in the Lilamrita how Satsarupa Maharaj, he did also the Prabhupada Lilamrita on rhyme. And there he is writing. He is writing how he said, Lord Ramachandra, when he went to Lanka, he had an army of monkeys. He said, and Prabhupada had to do it with hippies from the Lower East Side. So that was like really something. So we can look at ourselves. We can check it at checkers if we are human beings or animals. I've seen the ladies at the cash register, they have a cloth to wipe the conveyor belt from everything that leaks from the chicken that I don't remember. And it's not all the time, it's cloth in the belt. Anyway, you can check it out. Yes, what to say. So, yes, what are we? Anyway, leaving Bali for what it is and moving on. Another interesting, of course, Ravana is a very exciting personality. Ravana also can take different forms, and Ravana has his fierce form with the 10 heads and the so many arms, but Ravana also has a very beautiful form. Ravana is enormous and looks extremely powerful. It is described when Hanuman was on Lanka and had found Sita, and when he was then finally captured and brought before Ravana, he was just amazed. He was amazed when he saw this personality and his effulgence. He was just thinking, if he was righteous, he's a natural king, a natural ruler. If he was righteous, he could have been the king of the three worlds. But because he is not, therefore, he is a most dangerous personality. So, Ravana is certainly amazingly opulent, amazingly powerful, amazingly handsome, amazingly attractive. He lives there with his thousands of wives, which he has brought from all over the universe. But, as I said before, he has a few curses on his head. When he when he actually took Ramba, the Apsara, by force, and raped her in public, in front of everyone. When he did so, although she said, "I'm actually related to you because I'm married to your nephew, right, the son of Kuvira." At that time, he didn't care. But she cursed him that if ever again he would do such a thing, take a woman, try to take a woman by force, that he would die. So he was kind of, he had seen that many of such curses had come to pass. So he was a little weary of that. And that's why he didn't try to take Sita by force. That's why. In an earlier stage, in the Ramayana, it is described how Ravana is flying around with hordes of Rakshasas in the sky, in a plane, and the plane he has just taken from his brother Kuvira, the Pushpaka plane, and it's sort of an amazing, huge golden airship with parks and gardens and palaces, and he's flying in that in the sky, and it flies at will. And they are challenging various personalities, and they are killing sages and throwing contaminated substances on sacrifices and eating the sages while they are performing all these things. And they are feasting on human flesh and all that. And you just wonder, this is Treta Yuga. If Treta Yuga was that bad, then what should Kali Yuga be like? That's a little bewildering that... he said, no, it's just that the demons in previous yugas were more powerful. They were not more demoniac, they were just more powerful. Ravana was more powerful. Anyway, at one point, though, Ravana is flying around in that plane, and then he comes to a point where the plane cannot go any further, and it sort of goes away on another course. Is what's going on? Finally, there is this personality appearing, Nandi. And Nandi is a monkey type of personality who's guarding Mount Kailash for Lord Shiva, and says, no one can pass here. This is Mount Kailash, the abode of Lord Shiva. No one can pass here. So you better move on. You cannot pass here. Ravana says, who are you to tell me that I cannot pass here? I can go wherever I like. Nothing, no one can obstruct me. You, it's certainly not you, you monkey face. Right? And then, Nandi became angry and said, in the future you will be destroyed by monkeys. So in this way, another curse on his head. And then Ravana got so upset that he was trying to block him that he just manifested all his 20 arms and he put them under the mountain, under Mount Kailash, and he lifted Kailash. At that stage, the whole mountain was shaking, and Parvati, she became all worried. And then Parvati, she said, what is this? And Lord Shiva smiled, said, oh, it's the demon, Ravana. And she became very angry and said, because he frightened a woman will be the cause of his death. In this way, another curse. So he had many curses on his head. Meanwhile, he was lifting Mount Kailash and holding it in the air, and all the demons, all the rakshasas were glorifying for his power. And then Lord Shiva just lifted his foot, placed his toe on the mountain, and suddenly that mountain crushed Ravana, and his arms began crushing, got caught under the mountain. And, his ministers then advised him, since he knew the Vedas very well, to chant mantras in glorification of Lord Shiva, which is what he did. And in that way, eventually, the Lord released him and said, I am now pleased with you. Then the Brahmana said, if you're really pleased with me, then do not just release me, but also give me your Pasupati man. So in that way he had amazing weapons. Amazing weapons. I mean, when we are... Anyway, when it comes to the battle, the battle, of course, is hair raising. And we see that different personalities are fighting in that battle, and a very colorful one is of course Kumbhakarna. And Kumbhakarna is sort of fighting. He is enormous. And it takes a lot to wake him up. Lots of blood, flesh, animals, and noise, and candles, and all kinds of things. But when they see him on the battlefield, he sort of more represents brute force. And he is like, of course, called in the battle after many, many heroes have been killed. But still he dies before Indrajit. Indrajit is the next one who comes out. And Indrajit is yet another level. Indrajit is relying on puja. Indrajit is relying on worship. So somehow or other, we see that even Ravana, even the Rakshasas are recognizing that there are superior personalities upon whom they depend. Even they. But it's a bit twisted, and they see it more as, if you do the ritual properly, then you can just, it's some kind of magic, then automatically these things are rewarded. So if we approach spiritual life in this way, that we think, if I just perform this ritual, then I get all the benefits, and then automatically all the good results will come, that's an offensive mentality, which is rooted in a demoniac mentality. Just like it said, the eighth offense, the chanting of the holy name, is to think that the chanting of Hare Krishna is one of the karmakanda rituals, one of these auspicious rituals that bring good material results. In other words, some magic activity which can bring about result. So that is offensive. It has its roots in a demoniac mentality. In the devotee mentality, we see the dependence on Krishna. One thing in the Ramayana is destiny. Destiny is there at all times. At all times, there is certain personalities come on the way. There's that when Ram and Lakshman are still searching for Sita, and have no idea where to search really. They're in the forest and they meet that monster, this incredible Rakshasa Kabanda, right? Who is sort of, basically, he has no head. He has in his trunk a big mouse, and he has two huge arms that are miles long, and with these arms he's just pulling in different forest animals like bears and lions and tigers, and he shoves them into his mouth. So he's described, Kabanda. It's just no... And the reason why he has no head or trunk, what comes out is that because once he attacked Indra with his thunderbolt hit him, and then his head just went into his body, and his arms got cut off. So then Indra cursed him to live like that, and he said, how can I live like this? So then he gave him, okay, this mouth in his stomach, huge mouth and big arms. Anyway, so they're meeting this creature, and it's a whole thing. But, okay, they're almost devoured, Ram and Lakshman. But they managed to cut off the arms. Once they cut off the arms. But then it turns out that this personality is actually accursed. Accursed Gandharva. Again, we're seeing how the demons that have a history of their misfortune and how they became demons. He wasn't such a demoniac personality to start out with. He was a Gandharva, a devotional personality. But somehow or other he became careless, he committed an offense, he was cursed, and the reaction is righteous. So that's another point. But then by Ramachandra's killing him, he becomes purified and takes a celestial form, and then in the celestial form he begins to explain, right, how they should pursue their search for Sita and how he should connect with one who has gone through the same thing of being deprived of his wife, Sugriva. And that he'll be an ally, and then be successful. So we see the hand of destiny. We see the hand, even although Lord Ramachandra's prowess is incredible, still, at different points in time in the Ramayana, destiny is sort of helping him to achieve his end. And ultimately, that is how it is. We depend on providence. We depend on the support of the Supreme Lord. We depend on piety. We depend on mercy coming into our life. And it happens in our life in the same way that so many things enter into our life that have brought us on this path. Mercy and so on, and that keep us here and that make us successful throughout. So that is an interesting point to note, I thought. Well, you know, endless fighting, and of course demons fighting without Dharma. Therefore, demons also fighting at night. Therefore, demons also killing those who are asleep. Demons not following any principles. Such a personality is Meghananda or Indrajit. Eventually, between him and Lakshmana, it is a major fight. Major. It's not an easy fight. It's also like almost a full day fight from morning till night. So many weapons. Fine. And you know, balls get wounded. Sometimes it looks like one is winning, sometimes the other one winning. So like that, we also see the same when finally Ramana comes out and fights with Lord Ramachandra. When Ramana personally comes out, he just shoots some arrows that multiply into so many different arrows with snake heads and lion heads and bear heads, etc. And each of these arrows chases one monkey. So it's like he kills hundreds and thousands of monkeys just as he's coming out of the onto the battlefield with his first arrow. So Ravana is like some fighter, and so is Lord Ramachandra. But when he uses that Rakshasa weapon which he used on the monkey army on Lord Ramachandra, then Lord Ramachandra counteracts it with a Gandharva weapon, and in that way they use so many celestial weapons. When Ravana sends snakes, then Lord Ramachandra invokes a Garuda weapon, and you know all the arrows turn into eagles that eat the snakes, and all the snakes run away. I mean, for their life now. So these kind of weapons, you know, like these weapons have personalities, practically speaking. Yeah? It's like inconceivable. The arrows they shoot multiply into unlimited arrows. It is said there were so many arrows in the sky that neither Ram nor Ravana could see their opponent very well, because it's just like a curtain of arrows in the sky, so they couldn't see each other properly. That's how many arrows were there in the sky. It's just inconceivable the kind of weapons they fired at one another. And at one point, the sage Agastya Muni gave a mantra to Lord Ramachandra, where he could get the power that was within the hearts of all the demigods. And that power he could add to the celestial weapons. So he fired the Brahmastra, the ultimate weapon in the universe. He fired the Brahmastra, and then he added that prayer of the to get the power from the demigods in that Brahmastra, their sincerity, so that the Brahmastra would not fail. And it was that Brahmastra that finally killed Ravana. Before that, he had tried with many arrows, and he had managed at one point to shoot one arrow which had like a head of a half moon, and that arrow multiplied in 10, and it cut all the 10 heads of Ravana. And they were back next moment. And then again he shot the heads. 100 heads were cut off by Lord Ramachandra. Still, he did not die. And Vibhishana then told him, only, with the Brahmastra in the heart, only then. So, okay, that's finally then how Ravana was killed. And it was, what to say, like, after the whole thing was over, then united with Sita, and then you get the tragedy of the Ramayana begins, the tragedy of the doubt cast upon Sita, and that Lord Ramachandra is basically telling Sita that, now she's free, right? Now I've revenged the blemish on our royal house, now you are free to go. You can go now. He says, after all that, you can go now. And anyway, she calls upon the fire. She circumambulates Lord Ramachandra, walks around him, walks into the fire, a blazing fire, and comes out unharmed. So it's an Agni personally comes and testifies to her purity. So then, she's accepted by Lord Ramachandra, that everything is wonderful, and in order to go to Lanka, they go with that plane, and go not to Lanka, to Ayodhya, they go with that plane that Ravana stole from Kuvira, which is like a city, right, with palaces. So then Lord Ramachandra is going to travel with that plane to Ayodhya, and all the monkeys are there, and what are they going to do now? I mean, go home, it's over, the battle is over, and they're supposed to go home. You can go home now. And Lord Ramachandra says to Vibhishana, you give them a good reward, you give them lots of wealth and riches. They get that, but they're not happy with that. They don't want material wealth. That's not satisfying. They simply want the association of the Lord. So then Lord Ramachandra allows all of them to come into the plane also. So, and all the monkey soldiers that had died, they are revived. It is arranged. Indra comes and revives all these monkeys. So, that's a lot of monkeys, and they all go in that plane somehow, and they all fly to
to Ayodhya, and in Ayodhya, Sugriva takes a human form and is there also as Ram is being coronated to take the throne. Again, after some time, there are citizens that criticize Ram for being with Sita and, you know, for accepting her while she stayed in the house of another man. And again, he's compelled to send her away.
And he sends her away to the ashram of Valmiki and all that.
What to say? Here we are as Gaudiya Vaishnavas, departing from Dharma. Here is where we as Gaudiya Vaishnavas depart from the Ramayana. Here we transcend because say no, not Dharma before the relationship. The relationship before Dharma. Remember Krishna had given his word, he would not fight, but to save the life of Arjuna, he attacked Bhishmadev with the wheel of a cart. Otherwise Bhishma would have killed Arjuna. Krishna broke his word, he broke Dharma, because the relationship with the devotee was more important. But Lord Ramachandra is not showing the full transcendental nature of the relationship he has with Sita, with his eternal consort, which goes above everything. He doesn't show, he shows this Dharma. Dharma, all devouring Dharma, Dharma first. So, for the service of Krishna, we may even break Dharma. We saw that in Yudhisthira, who never lied in his life, but for the service of the Lord had to lie. And couldn't do it. And finally, he had to say, Ashwatthama is dead. He couldn't do it. So there was an elephant, Ashwatthama. He said, okay, they killed the elephant. He said, now you say, Ashwatthama, the elephant is dead. Okay, I can do that. And then they threw conch shells while he said elephant. Right? So in that way, Yudhisthira somehow or other created an impression in Dronacharya that Ashwatthama was dead because Yudhisthira said it. So then Drona believed it because Yudhisthira never spoke a lie. And he still didn't speak a lie. But then it said at the end of his life, Yudhisthira, he saw that all his brothers were in hell. Yudhisthira was there, was taken to hell. He himself did not go to hell. But he was just taken to hell to see that his brothers were in hell. But that was actually what Yudhisthira had to go through because he couldn't lie. Because he wasn't able to take on the higher principle of the pleasure of the Lord. Because he was so attached to Dharma. He was Dharma. So we see in the pastimes of Krishna that we go beyond Dharma, that we transcend Dharma for the pleasure of the Lord. In the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra we see Dharma at all costs, even at the cost of the relationship with Sita. And so that is interesting. Of course, you know, for us, Dharma is a foundation. For Gaudiya Vaishnavas, we are following Varnashram Dharma. And that is our foundation. And of course, for us, it's a step up from where we came. Because we didn't follow any principles. So to actually start following the principles of Varnashram is a step up. But it's not enough. We must go beyond. We must go beyond. To do whatever it takes to please Krishna. Whatever it is required.
And that is not what comes from within, you know. Okay, in my heart, I feel that Krishna wants me to rob the bank. No, not in that way. And that's why I break dharma. Because it's what Krishna is dictating to me. No. Because every step of the way, we cannot rely on our heart. Every step on the way, we are bound by the order of a superior Vaishnava, our spiritual master and spiritual masters. Diksha Guru, Siksha Gurus. We're bound by the order of the superiors. And in that way, we can walk the fine line of the path of surrender and even sometimes transcend dharma. That is possible for the Gaudiya Vaishnava only when one is protected by the spiritual master. But it is interesting. So yes, we are looking at this, at the Ramayana, from that perspective. From the perspective of a Gaudiya Vaishnava. From the perspective of a follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Understanding that somewhere it falls short if we simply walk the path of dharma. We must walk the path of pure devotional service. But, and therefore in relationship with Krishna, we walk the path of pure devotional service. But even there, we fall short. We fall short in that devotional service. And then, all that can save us is mercy. How far does our devotional service go? Is it so impressive, the way we chant the Maha Mantra? Who can say? So ultimately, we fall short and we depend on mercy. So therefore, although we are commemorating this day and we are praying to Lord Ramachandra for the strength to walk the path of dharma, we also realize the limitations. And we go one step further. Going the path of just surrendering, sarva dharmam paricaya manikam sarananda. Just abandon all varieties of dharma and just surrender to Krishna, whatever he desires. We do that. But then we realize that, can we do it? Then we turn to Lord Chaitanya for his mercy. And Lord Chaitanya's mercy manifests to those who are giving the mercy. Because it is said that by giving away the fruits of love of God, you find that you have more than you had before. And therefore the way to get the increasing mercy of Lord Chaitanya is to distribute the fruits of love of God. And that is the only way that we can get the full benefit, the full experience. So we understand that Ayodhya, the eternal abode of Lord Ramachandra, is situated in the eternal spiritual sky. It is said that in the spiritual sky, the entire spiritual sky is known as the Brahma Jyoti. Half of that spiritual sky is covered by a lotus. That lotus is Golok Vrindavan. Within the other half of the spiritual sky, there are different Vaikuntha planets. And there are so many forms, Narayan, with their eternal associates. Then on the petals of that lotus flower, on the external periphery of the petals, is Ayodhya. In the center of the petals, towards the center, there is Mathura and Dwarka. Just touching the central whirl of the lotus. And then, that central lotus is actually Golok, where Krishna performs his eternal pastime. In the pastimes, in Vaikuntha, it is said that between Krishna, or between Narayan and his devotees, there are 2.5 rasas, Santa, Dasya, and Gauravasakya. Gauravasakya is friendship mixed with awe and reverence. Also, in Ayodhya, we can see how different rasas are being manifest. We can see that up to the parental ras that is there. But we also remember that the sages of Dandakaranya, who somehow or other developed a desire for a conjugal relationship with the Supreme Lord, could not satisfy that with Lord Ramachandra because he had taken that Ekapatni Vrata. And that these sages later came back in the pastime of Krishna as the Visicharis, as the gopis who had been the sages of the forest. So in Ayodhya, there are 4 rasas. So I showed 2.5 rasas in Vaikuntha, 4 rasas in Ayodhya. Then when we come to Mathura and Dwarka, there are 5 rasas. Because in Dwarka, Krishna with all the queens and so on. But these rasas are not fully experienced because the conjugal ras there is mixed with Aishwarya, with all reverence and respect. And it's not the same as the pure unalloyed love which is found in the gopis. So in this way, in Vrindavan, 5 rasas. So we understand when we are looking at, on this day, at Lord Ramachandra, we are looking through the glasses of the Gaudiya Siddhanta. We are looking through the vision of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, through his teachings. And we appreciate that Vraja Bhakti, this unalloyed love of the gopis, is the highest. And therefore, we reserve the worship of Lord Ramachandra for this particular day, for one day a year. And the rest of the year, we're focusing on Krishna and on Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It may be difficult to understand for some who are not so familiar with the Gaudiya Vaishnava Siddhanta. But I tried to sort of... I tried to put it a little bit in perspective on this evening, on this day. We are praying to Lord Ramachandra. We're praying for this mercy. We're praying for strength. We're praying to Hanuman for that our service attitude may develop the way the service attitude develops. And yet, we are looking at this Sadguru's form, this form, 2 arms, golden, holding a danda and a pot, the arms of Lord Chaitanya. 2 arms of Krishna playing the flute, blackish, bluish arms, and 2 green arms, the arms of Lord Ramachandra holding the bow and arrow. And we are worshipping on this day, we're actually worshipping the Sadguru. We're seeing the whole Ramayana in that perspective. That's what I wanted to share with you this evening. Now it's late. What to do? It's the Ramayana, and I really made it short. I told you, we could have started this morning, and I would have gone through the whole thing from beginning to end, but I guess, or we could have started days before, and somehow I would have changed. But I had to squeeze it all in one lecture. So whatever I miss, your favorite pastime, I may have missed it, but at least you didn't miss it. So in that way, no loss, our good fortune on this day, seeking the blessings of our Sadhguru, Supreme Lord, Lord Ramachandra. Sisi Ram Navami Maha Mahotsava Ki Jai. Sisi Sitaram.